Okay, the date is 6/28/85, and I'm talking with Mr. Herbert Hageman. Mr. Hageman, could you please give me your full name?
Yes, Herbert Luders Hageman. I have to take the last name of a great-grandfather.
Okay. And where and when were you born, sir?
1921, January 19th, in Livermore.
In Livermore.
Right here, actually.
Okay. And could you describe where this is? This is
well, we're west of the flagpole, 2.5 miles. Used to be the end of Olivina Avenue. It's 455 Olivina now. The edge of town when I was a small kid was almost North L Street. Probably P Street would be the edge at that time.
Okay, and could you please give me the names of your parents?
Yes, my father was Herbert L. Hageman, Sr., and my mother, Edna Ruth Hageman. She was a cottager.
Okay.
For that.
And were both of them resided in Livermore?
My father was born and raised in Livermore. My mother was born in Pleasanton and went to school at Livermore.
I see. Okay. So you, as far as your parents, they've lived in this area for...
Lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what were their occupations, and or did they own any businesses?
Well, my father owned this place. It was a ranch.
Okay.
And he spent his life as a rancher. My mother, she had a business education, and among her several jobs she had was for the Livermore Water and Power Company, secretary and bookkeeper, and also secretary for the Livermore Merchants Association,
okay,
which preceded Chamber of Commerce.
So that was that the Livermore Merchants Association, that was like a, was that a strictly for women, or was that?
No, it was for the business people.
For the business people?
Yeah, merchants.
And it was that it helped promote business
in Livermore? It promoted business, and it kept track of who was who. In fact, they had a blacklist.
Oh, really?
Those people who didn't pay the bills and those people who did pay the bills, all very secret, of course.
Oh, a blacklist. That's kind of interesting.
I don't think they do that anymore, but... in the old days, Livermore, you see, was maybe 2,500 people.
Uh-huh.
In that time, maybe even 2,000.
Okay. Let's say, so right now, we'll go into the business climate, and maybe go back to the blacklist thing a little later. But, so it's interesting to me. What would you say, in the town of Livermore, what would you say were the more prominent businesses going on in the late 20s and 30s, early 30s?
Well, the area here was strictly agriculture at that time. The few things that had come in 1912, the fuse works, that was Merritt's, Coast Manufacturing, they called it.
Yeah.
They made fuses and powder and so on. They were east of town. There was a brickworks earlier, of course, very early. And the brickworks was really very important. It was important to the town more than it was for their amount of bricks that they exported from here. Because people would come from Europe, you know, and the first job they'd take would be at the brickworks.
So you had a lot?
They'd come to a relative or a friend,
mm-hmm,
of the family that had a ranch, and they'd set themselves down for a couple of weeks, and they'd go and get a job at the brickworks, the brickyard.
I see. So was there a lot of immigrant population here?
Quite a few. Quite a few. Italians and Germans and some French.
Uh-huh.
And there were always that nationality of farmers.
I see.
And they grew their people. And they, while they were at the brickyard, they'd take citizenship class.
Oh, I see.
Get their papers, and then they'd go on to something better, and a good many of them went into business for themselves.
For like wineries?
Well, the wineries were mostly earlier. The people that still own the wineries, there's only two now. they were in back in the 80s. And Mr. Wendy had worked in the wines up in the Napa Valley. And Concannon, I believe, he had experience before he came here, and he had capital, and he simply came here, and they both of them, they bought their vineyards and started out.
I see. So the, as far as the vineyards go, that was something that was established really like in the 80s, 1800s.
1880s. The wineries and vineyards
I see.
Got
okay.
a real establishment, yes.
And what were... So common occupations would be more of an agricultural background?
Agricultural. The big thing were the warehouses. And, of course, in the early days, a warehouse was also a commission merchant.
Uh-huh.
There weren't stores enough in town where they could get the goods for you and have it shipped in by railroad. And you'd have it. So everything was based on what the rancher did. He sold his crop to the warehouse, and then he went uptown and bought his supply of whatever. And we had hardware stores, and of course there was the grocery stores, and they usually carried a hardware line. And the other businesses, they were all more or less geared to the agricultural system.
I see. There wasn't... And
they depended on the agriculture to be their livelihood.
And so that was a major portion inside the, say, inside the town of Livermore. Everything was more geared toward the agriculture.
It was.
Everything was geared toward
yeah.
the agriculture. Mm-hmm. And this, you would say this stretched on through the 30s?
Yes, it did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't anything, as far as, would you notice anything new cropping up? Any new types of businesses that were coming up, let's say?
Automobiles,
maybe?
Automobiles were going when I was a kid. You know, my mother saw the changeover, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the automobiles improve and advance.
I see.
So from the Model T Ford to what we have today is quite a change.
Yeah, it is quite a lot of technology passed.
And of course the trains. Trains were here for a long time, but in the 20s and 30s, trains were still the big thing. Trucks hadn't taken over the drayage business yet, and the roads hadn't been built. We had the Lincoln Highway, but we didn't have freeways as we have them today. Everything is trucked today, and the railroads are practically out. But railroad was still the big thing, and the depot was the center of town. We still had the passenger trains, and if you didn't have a car, you took the train to the city.
You took train to like San Francisco or Oakland,
yeah.
things like that.
Mm-hmm. It was kind of a long trip, but it was an easy trip.
It was an easy trip. So basically, cars were just starting to get into popularity, but they were more of a novelty as
well, yes.
Transportation.
Most people, if there was something in Livermore they couldn't get, fancy clothes, for instance, or whatever, they'd take a shopping tour in their car down to Oakland or San Francisco.
I see. But you could get it via the Lincoln Highway.
Yes, you'd go out on Lincoln Highway and go straight on through Dublin Canyon and on into Oakland.
Okay.
Well, sometimes take an hour and a half with a car.
Yeah, it takes about 50 minutes now, I think.
Well, and Oakland's more like 30.
Yeah, Oakland, San Francisco, about 50. What would you say were businesses that were becoming obsolete or starting to close down?
The warehouses.
The warehouses at the same time as they were big?
They weren't obsolete in the 20s and 30s. That had to come after World War II.
Yeah, which they were just...
When that happened.
Trying to stay before 1940.
Yeah. No, before 1940, all of this was strong. Livermore was healthy. And even with the Depression, Livermore had its captive business here. And, the businesses did thrive. Everybody had a hardship, but no more than anywhere else. In fact, I think Livermore was a little better off because there were a lot of ranching people around here who did not invest in the stock market and had money.
I see. So it was
so there was some capital to put back into the local economy.
So Livermore was something like isolated from everything else that was going on,
Yeah.
A lot more self-sufficient as far as what it produced and what it used.
Yeah.
And so then I would think the Depression didn't really have that big of an effect on it, or would you say it did?
Well, it had an effect everywhere. Those who had investments, and, well, everybody had some. They lost.
Mm-hmm.
The market crashed. And that was the big thing. That I don't think there was ever anybody in Livermore that I knew that went hungry.
Mm-hmm.
Because we lived on the ranch. And if we had hungry friends, we gave them the food. That was the way of the small town then.
Yeah, that I referred to another lady I'm supposed to interview. She refers to the cash and carry.
Well, yes, that was the old. That was even before the Depression. Cash and carry. I can remember in the kitchen we had the grocery bills on a nail for the whole year. And at the end of the year, add them all up and pay the bill.
Yeah, you had a years-long credit.
Yeah.
And then that changed when they had the merchants that came in. Or these co-op stores, I guess.
Well, yes. But see, this was the old agricultural way. Once a year, you sold your crop.
Uh-huh.
And when you sold your crop, say sometime in the fall, everything was done. The cattle were sold. The grain crops were sold. And you had all your money put together. You went to town and you paid your bill.
Okay.
And then you started again for the next year. Not that you couldn't pay it as you went. This was the custom.
Just that's when you had the money to pay it off, usually.
Well, that was the way it was geared, but it was the custom.
Okay.
The merchant expected that to happen, and the farmer did planned on it, and sometimes the farmer thought it was kind of inconvenient. He'd like to just... There were some who just paid as they did it. In fact, we did. Like in the Depression, that sort of changed a little bit because the farmer would come in with his produce and he traded for groceries that he needed. So there he paid right there, and instead of having this cash and carry thing, he didn't bother with it. He just paid his bill as he bought it, paid cash or trade. A whole lot of trade, eggs and butter and see, we didn't have the restrictions on dairy products and things that we have today, and you could make butter and sell it.
I see. So it's more of a... So the people that lived in Livermore are a lot more self-sufficient, though, as far as... Would you say, as far as what they produced and what they bought, it was everything was very self-contained?
Yeah, they could do for themselves.
And like you say, if they wanted something special outside of what was inside the town, they'd go to Oakland or San Francisco.
Yeah.
Okay.
They did, yeah.
Where would you say was the impact of large employers like Kaiser or like the Kaiser Gravel or Hetch Hetchy Water Project?
Okay, Kaiser came in about 1924, I think. Fuse Works had an impact because they hired quite a few people. Of course, they came earlier, but they, as I was a small boy, they were quite a big thing in the town. And then the Veterans Hospital came in, and that hired quite a few people. For a small town, you know, if they hired 100 people, that was a big thing.
Yeah.
And then the gravel pits, Kaiser was the first. For Livermore, and he located where the hospital is today. That's where Kaiser's first plant was.
I see.
And he mined the creeks, and then he moved down to Pleasant. Of course, earlier they had Jameson's company had started out in Pleasanton, and the rock quarry was beginning to take hold before 1920 already. Buildings in the Bay Area, and this building expanded, so did the rock quarries out here. And of course it became a big thing for the local economy. That was one of the things after these people who went to work at the brickyard, the emigrants, they would look for a job at the gravel plant.
It was
that was the next step.
It was a step up in employment?
A step up in employment.
I see. Was this looked upon as, let's say, as like were they looked on as a welcome thing, or were they looked on as something?
Oh, they were a welcome thing in their time.
Were they
because they weren't big enough to. We couldn't visualize what they were going to do to the landscape
like
it is today. So if we could have seen that, we probably would have taken a shotgun after them. So but they started out small, you know.
Yeah, and it was just something that you couldn't foresee.
No.
Okay. You were referring to your mother was a member of the, what was that association?
The Livermore Merchants Association. That was, she was secretary.
So that was before the...
That was before
the Chamber of Commerce?
1926.
I see.
Chamber of Commerce was formed in 1926.
Was the Chamber of Commerce, was that an active body during the 20s and 30s?
Yeah. Very small, but active. Well, the town was small. And as far as bringing in business, futile attempt because there was no need for it. That is, you know, there was no need in the Bay Area to expand out this way. So they simply took care of their own. And they did bring some things in, and they were active in bringing the Rad Lab in. That comes in 1950. But in the early years, their businesses were new stores or the sale of the business to somebody else. You know, Livermore was a little bit stagnant, you know.
As far as business was?
Well, yes, they could only have so much, you know,
right,
to satisfy the population. And growth was limited.
Well, like you say, it was like a homogeneous population, an agricultural base.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, then in the 20s, Hetch Hetchy began to work here. They were digging the tunnel for the water project for San Francisco, and they hired multitudes of people. I think the town grew 1,000 in population while Hetch Hetchy was working. And we saw some temporary new business. I can't remember what they were, but they were here and gone. And the old businesses that were established flourished and continued afterward. You know, dropped back to their normal flow of business.
Did you know what type of business it was, or that was the one that flourished for that brief period?
Oh, I would say all businesses, all retail trade. Clothing stores, grocery stores, and hardware, because people lived here, they had to fix a faucet or something, do some work in the house.
Yeah.
And just about everything that's household. And that's all we had, you know.
Okay. I guess we go back to problems with financing or credit for farmers or merchants. Was there a big problem with that? Or?
I never knew of a problem, no. There were the local banks. Well, by the 1920s, the Livermore Bank had became Bank of Italy. It was bought out. And the other one, there were only two, the other one was... Livermore Valley Savings, and that was bought out by American Trust.
I see.
So we had two branch banks here, major corporations, which operated the same as the old system did. And in the 20s, it was prosperity time, and financing wasn't necessary. In the 30s, it was a different story. But the banks did cooperate.
Was there any federal project works going on?
Yes, the Federal Land Bank came in. Now, I couldn't tell you exactly when. They later became Production Credit Bureau.
I see.
But they were the Federal Land Bank, and you got a loan at a very low rate of interest. This was designed especially to overcome the Depression and put the farmers back into business, you know, so they could hold their land and not have it taken over by a bank or foreclosures and so on. You know.
So there was some sort of federal help.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And was basically to help support the farmers during...
Yes, it was designed especially for agriculture.
Okay.
And they had an office here in town. They started out in Dublin, very small, and then they rented a space here in Livermore, and then later they built a building. And they did a very good service. They give you a long-term loan at low interest rates, and if you couldn't make your payment, it was a yearly payment, just agricultural basis of everything, you know. If you couldn't make your payment, why, they gave you a break and you could go on till next year. Sometimes there was a dry year, you know. And if that happened, okay, next year maybe it's better.
Okay.
The farmer has to gamble.
You know? Yeah. Now, so there was, as far as financing and credit, there wasn't really any problems at all.
No real problems.
And you had federal backing also during that time.
Oh, yes.
Some federal backing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So,
I remember the bank holiday. That's when this, under Roosevelt, you know, the first thing he did was declare a bank holiday.
Yeah, he closed them all down.
He valued the dollar.
Right. Mm-hmm. We gave them new values to bring the economy back on its feet.
And then Federal Land Bank took over a good many. A lot of them stayed right with the old banks, which was fine. But we had a Federal Land Bank loan. So you had expenses on your place and no money to pay. So you had to go get a loan to pay your hired help and your supply costs and gasoline and whatever you had to use to harvest your crops.
On your own? So you used the money that you got off from the loan from the land bank to pay off your hired hands and just regular...
Then as the years went by, you kept reducing and reducing, and then it's gone.
Oh, I see. So it was like a time period type loan, was it? That you had a certain...
Yeah, you could... I really can't remember. It was made for a number of years. I think 5 years, and then you could renew it, option to renew.
I see.
If you didn't have the capital to eliminate it. No, there was no problem, really.
No problem
basically,
at all.
No problem.
Okay. As far as the places of business going on inside Livermore, would you say the majority of the shop owners or merchants, did they own or rent their places of business?
It was about 50-50, I guess.
So you wouldn't say
about 50-50. There was a flour mill in town, and they owned a lot of property on Main Street, and the old man died and left it to his heirs, and I think they still hold a lot of property. And those buildings were all rented.
Uh-huh.
So any businesses in there were a rent. Now there were lodge buildings, built commercial buildings, and they leased their space. Like Dutchers, they owned their building. And there was a Goebbels Meat Market they owned. They built a new building. There were, I would say in the 20s at least, it was about 50-50.
Mm-hmm. So it was, space was not really a big problem as far as getting...
No, I can remember some empty spaces.
I see. So basically it was just a lot of businesses. Well, you'd say they would all be congregated in one space, though, once you say, let's say like a center of town.
Yes, well, of course, the center of town was from the flagpole east and west and this way on the side streets for one block.
I see.
And that was it. And they went down to L Street. Beyond L Street, it was all warehouse.
And so you'd have like a center of town, which was L Street and the flagpole, and then past that was just...
No, then up to the railroad track on the east side.
Up to the railroad
track. There was business up there.
Okay. But that was like your major block, and then from there, in any other direction, or was it be east to west?
Well, north. North, it stopped pretty much at the... It stopped at the railroad track, really.
Mm-hmm.
And 2nd Street on the south side.
Okay.
There wasn't very much business on 2nd Street.
And as we were talking about before, most of the shopping was done in Livermore for what you need, your basic supplies.
Oh, yes, basic things were right here.
And anything else you did need was outside, you could go get it. Wasn't that unavailable to get?
Well, the ladies like to go for something classy in the stores in the city. So they did. So the ladies' shops didn't exactly thrive all the time. But so they did, really. There was a lady called Carrie Mockley who had a dress shop, and she became pretty wealthy. But they used to complain everybody saw the dress before they bought it, you know. The whole town went to look.
Was it like in the store window or something? Or?
Well, yeah, they go in and try things on.
Oh, I see.
You shouldn't ask me about that. What do I know about ladies' clothes?
Probably not as much as I
did. That was probably the men's clothes. They didn't have a tailor here, but they fit them. So if you wanted a good-looking thing, you'd go out to San Francisco or Oakland.
I see. So basically San Francisco and Oakland were the, I guess you could say, like the places to be if you wanted to get something outside.
Yeah, it was also you were felt a little classy if you were going out of town.
Oh, yeah.
I can remember old Mr. Victor, they had the clothing store. He grabbed you by the, in the back with a coat. Fits good. You draw it up.
You just go out up like that. And you'd buy it and be all baggy inside.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
They didn't have a tailor, you know. It's take it as is.
That's funny. So,
they had dressmakers in town.
So, things were, I guess people, they saw that things were changing or that they wanted to compete with San Francisco or Oakland some way, so that
there was always a competitive feeling with the big San Francisco stores. Always was, always would be,
mm-hmm.
for a small town, you know. But basically, you could get most of the things here. But if you wanted to appear somewhere in a very fancy dress, you didn't buy it at Livermore, you went. Or a fancy suit.
Yeah.
You know, you'd go off to...
The prestige would be coming from San Francisco.
Yeah.
I see.
And, of course, the label. So, especially in the 20s. Livermore's 400 had to be bigger and above. Every small town has it.
Livermore's 400 has the social class?
Yeah, the high society.
I see.
As if we had any.
That's pretty funny. With the social, that's something I want to go on right now. I mean,
well, it exists in every community.
But the Livermore 400,
that's just my term for it.
Oh, I see. It wasn't a commonly known thing?
No. Heavens, no. They couldn't count 400 people like that. More like 50.
50 people. And there were, I guess it'd be more like, merchants?
Not all. There were farmers and the winery people and the Livermore Sanitarium out here. They hired quite a few people, and of course they came in. I forgot to mention that.
Sanitarium?
They started in the 90s. They were, it was a hospital. Mental hospital, mm-hmm. private, you know, very well run.
I used to hear a story there. I guess it was it served as a sanitarium for, World War I vets, things like that.
Yeah. Well, that's further out. See, that was the Veterans Hospital.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there was a tuberculosis sanitarium beyond that, run by the county.
I see. Tuberculosis was pretty big during the turn of the century, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the remembering businesses that were going on then, what would you say the differences from then and now were? There a lot of big change?
There's a big change from what we used to have. Today, Livermore has one hardware store. When I was a kid, there were at least three hardware stores. The Dutchers were the big one. And then the warehouse handled hardware.
So basically everything's going back to there. Everything was basically geared towards the agriculture.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. What were the major conveniences, like major hotels?
Oh, Livermore had a lot of hotels in the early days. There was the Livermore Hotel up by the flagpole. And there was, Mally's sort of ran a hotel right in the middle of the south side of Main Street. And then down by L, there were two. There was the Washington Hotel. It was built by Bartolini, and Mally's bought it later. And they call it the Palace Hotel. Boy, some palace. And then across the street was the Valley Hotel. It started out as Germania Hotel. And then there was Hooper's, where Colonel Sanders' chicken is now.
Oh, really?
Hooper's Farmer's Hotel.
I see.
And that became the stage depot for the buses, Greyhound and the ones that were earlier. And then there was one, there's a bakery and a flower shop and a beauty shop, I think, right close to L Street on Main on the north side. That was a hotel, and it burnt. But that it burnt many years ago. But the hotels in the before the automobiles, they did a thriving business, and they had a restaurant. Mally's had a fine restaurant in their time. They all had a little restaurant, you know.
All the hotels. Hotels and the restaurants and movie theaters inside of Livermore. And you were talking about the restaurants within them?
Well, yes.
Mally's.
Mally's was a top restaurant for many, many years. Of course, in the 20s and 30s, Croce came in here and he had a restaurant in the show building, Scanoni building, upstairs. And he ran a very good restaurant. They have since moved to Lodi, and you probably know what the restaurant is up there right now. It's first class, and it was here in Livermore. There was one thing about it. See, we had Prohibition in the 20s. And, of course, there were plenty of bootleggers around Livermore, as there were everywhere. And the major bootleggers used to meet at Croce's maybe once a week.
Oh, really? It was a place to meet?
It was a place to meet, and it was also a place for the organized bootleggers from the Bay Area came out here because they had a big still out here in Mendenhall Springs, up in the
Mendenhall
mountains
Springs.
Here, yeah.
And so that it was just like, this is the place to meet for all the major bootleggers in the
Well, there was a big ring of bootleggers up and down the coast, and some of our major people in the county area were a part of it, including. Will this tape be buried?
I don't know.
I better not say what I was about to say.
Sure, go ahead. I don't see anything wrong with
it. Well, Earl Warren was one of the big people in it.
Earl Warren?
Yeah.
He
at the time he was district attorney for the county.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yes, it was incredible, and. The still was run by Walker up here in the hills, and Jack Padilla was the front. What should I say? He was the
he covered for him.
No, he sold it.
He sold it for him.
He sold the stuff.
How do you? But selling was illegal, wasn't it?
It was all illegal. Yeah.
It was all illegal.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I can remember my dad bought an old Dodge from Ed Alward, probably a 1915 car. The only thing that worked on the dashboard was the oil gauge. And he was going to have some kind of a get-together, so he went to Jack Cardella to get some liquor. You know. And what he did, he'd take your car and go get it and bring it back to you, and then you'd drive away.
Oh, so you never bought it. You just gave him the money, and then...
Yeah, then he'd go get it for you wherever, the secret place. You know, I don't know where it was, but I can remember he came back, and he says he was a character. He says, why didn't you bring your good car? Suppose I'd have to make a getaway.
was there a lot of... was there any type of law enforcement for it against this?
Well, yes, there was. There was a big investigation going on, and sometime around like 29 or 30, they raided the still.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack Cardella, they raided the whole thing. The whole organization was up for grabs. So they made a deal. And somebody had to go to the slammer, San Quentin. So they paid Jack Cardella to do it.
Hey, so we go to the slammer.
He went to San Quentin for I don't know how many years, two or three or whatever. And when he came out, he got $400 a month, which Depression days was a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
And every 2 years, he got a new LaSalle or a new Cadillac. That went on for years and years.
Wow.
And as soon as Earl Warren was made governor, he pardoned Jack Cardella, first thing, so he could vote and hold public office.
And then he becomes a Supreme Court Justice.
Yeah, then he became a Supreme Court Justice.
That's really interesting.
The public doesn't know that.
No, I guess not. That's,
I hope they don't hear it from me. Well, I don't think anybody's going to.
This is just a tape. And
yeah. Now, there's no documentation that I know of that I could prove my statements with, but I'm sure if it was looked up, it could be found, you know. Court records would be public.
So it was an involvement of both sides. There was something like the district attorney knew of this prohibition. I mean,
yes.
Knew about the alcohol production, but was in on it.
He was in on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what happened.
And,
of course, like the payment, the new car and the so much a month, there's no way to prove it except I heard it from Jack Cardella's nephew.
Oh, I see.
But I'm sure it's true. There's no reason why it wouldn't be. But it's all past history now.
Kind of hit me there with Earl.
No, it's the same way as these wonderful Navy people today who are selling stuff to the Russians.
Yeah.
That's much worse. I think making alcohol is a lot less of a crime.
Yeah, it's not really a crime at all. Let's see. Now, one thing you told me about the blacklist. Was this something that was going on in the 20s and 30s, or was it...
Well, it was going on before the 20s and into the 20s, I'd say probably up to the time Chamber of Commerce took over. That was a convenience record for the business people.
Mm-hmm.
It was a record of those people in town. You say you got 2,500 people, and maybe there's 50 of those people or 50 families who didn't pay their bills. Like deadbeats, you know.
Bad credit rating.
That's what it amounted to, a bad credit rating. Today you have a credit bureau who handles this stuff for you.
IRS, things like that.
Yeah, well, so the Merchants Association. No, not IRS, private. There are private credit things who investigate a person's credit and give out the information.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So this is what the Merchants Association did in their time. But in a little small town, they didn't have much to do.
So there
weren't that many.
What would you say their actions amounted to as far as not letting someone buy anything?
Well, it's a warning to the merchant. Watch this guy because he gets your money. You know, make him pay cash or something like that.
This is not something that was made public. It was just something that was kind of known.
It was a service for the merchants.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Now it's going to lead into some community activities during Livermore.
Yeah.
Were there any, what would you say were like the big parades or other forms of entertainment outside?
Well, there were two things. Probably the major thing was the old 4th of July parade, which from time immemorial was a big celebration. In the early days it would be Livermore, then it would be Pleasant, and then it would be Sunol. But then it got to be each town had their own.
Oh,
the population grew from 500 to 1,000, you know.
Yeah, that'd be bigger.
So in my time, we already had the rodeo, which was first one was held in, I think, 1919 or 1918, I don't remember which. It was done for the Red Cross after World War II. Anyway, it was a combination. They would have the 4th of July parade, and at the same time, the rodeo was going on. So they combined, and today we have the rodeo parade, which is an outgrowth of this thing. And we had the wonderful floats, and we had always had a goddess of liberty. Some local young girl was chosen to depict the goddess of liberty on a big float, all decorated.
Oh, that's great.
One year they had Helen Reuter, and they had four horses to pull her. she used to be pretty heavy.
Oh, I see.
Well, they had a four-horse team for the float, because it was on a big wagon. You know.
She was pretty big, huh? That's pretty funny.
But as we'd all go, we'd go up 4 o'clock in the morning and park the car. And then we'd ride to town in the Model T and sit in the car to watch the parade on Main Street.
You had to get up that early?
Just to park the car.
Just park the car? Mm-hmm. It was that big of an event?
Oh, yes, it was a big thing. And then sometimes they'd have the Livermores were in the parade one year. All my relatives, you know, just go and wave at them. And they'd always have local color, along with floats that would come from the outside. There was lots of local color. And there'd be some farmers would go in there, they'd even tie flowers onto their moor and ride down the street in the parade.
So it was like, yeah, like two or three big events.
Yeah, the other one I'd say was the Holy Ghost. We had a big Portuguese population here. And they had their own, where the Eagles Hall is now, that belonged to the Portuguese Lodge. And of course this is a church celebration, you know. Mm-hmm. So they'd have this thing, it would be, I think, in June, if I remember right, like the first part of June. And they'd have fireworks, and they'd have a big parade. They'd go up North Livermore and up to St. Michael's Church. And there they had a special mass and crowned the Queen. And they had all the Queen's attendants. It was fantastic. They still have them in some communities, but they disbanded this one as the generations went by. There was a lack of interest, and they didn't speak Portuguese anymore, and they lost the contact with the old traditions.
I see.
So they gave it up. It's too bad, because we used to have a good time.
Well, where were the topics of community interest or importance discussed? Was there like a basic meeting place in Livermore?
Well, yes, Sweeney Opera House.
Sweeney Opera House. Where would you say it's located now?
McLeod, First and McLeod. New Way Auto Parts, is there a New Way Auto Parts there? There was.
I think so.
The front part of the building is still there. It burnt in about 1946 or 7, long enough. It was a nice big place, dance floor, and it had a stage for the Benjamins. Medicine show.
The medicine show?
Be there. Uh-huh. And then the graduations, I can remember, would be there. Anything that was like that, they held it in the Sweeney Opera House. And then later they held it in the show, the movie house, Scannoni Building.
Scannoni Building?
Yeah.
Okay.
And of course, they would have to stop the movies, you know, but there was a stage in there, and they could use that for various things. But Sweeney's, I think, was probably used more for the local get-togethers. Every year, the Fireman's Dance was in Sweeney's, Fireman's Ball. That was a big event. The whole town would participate.
So any type of let's see, a civic events, as you discussed in this question, was the flagpole. I assume flagpole.
Well, the flagpole in the early days, if there were any political talks or anything, why they'd set up a little grandstand or something there around the flagpole, and the guy would get up there and talk.
Mm-hmm.
See, the right there was the Livermore Hotel and all of that, and it was the center of town.
So,
but when the automobiles were in, they gave that up because traffic, you know, had to go through it.
Drive around the flagpole.
Yeah.
So the flagpole was seen as something more like a sounding board, would you say, or?
Not really.
Just some place where people would meet and talk?
Well, it was the center of the town.
Uh-huh.
They called it Mill Square because the old mill. You used to enter the mill where the Hub Saloon was.
Okay.
And, well, it just was a place in the old Hub Saloon. This is before Prohibition. That was the place where you went and discussed, met all the politicians and the big wheels and had a drink and discussed things.
I see.
It's all gone today. It's Lizzie's Park or some ridiculous thing. Aunt Lizzie was a local character. That, I don't know if you want to hear this.
I can go ahead and see.
Well, she used to go around. She'd pick up cigar butts and sell them for snuff.
Oh, really?
That's how she made her living. So they named that street.
Lizzie
South
Street.
Livermore Avenue was Lizzie Street.
I see.
Now they have Lizzie's Park.
Did the business community itself sponsor any events, any type of entertainment, or anything to increase their own sales?
No, they really didn't.
I mean, something like, you know, Pleasanton has their sidewalk sales.
No, they didn't have anything like that. They all entered into 4th of July, of course. And that brought people to town, you know, along with the rodeo. God, there'd be 10,000-15,000 people in town. God, I can remember, I was in the parade more than once. But this one time we had an old buggy and we put the plow horses in it. And God, the traffic, I had to cross Main Street to come home, you know, and the traffic was terrible, bumper to bumper, just, and the old horses, I was just 10 years old, and I just put the lines down and let them do it. And they'd squeeze in, you know, the car would be right there, and they'd look mean at the car and just squeeze in, and first thing you know, we got through the thing. They'd wait for us.
So there wasn't really any, outside of those events, like
there was no
the Holy Ghost and
No, the events were all social. There would be church socials and like the Holy Ghost, the Fireman's Ball and 4th of July were the big things. And they used to have street dances with Holy Ghost and with and everybody went, you know. They'd dance on the street. They'd close off J Street right there by the Forester's Hall.
Uh-huh.
And they'd have a street dance. And the whole town would be there, gosh, with all their kids.
So things like the Holy Ghost was a really big thing. Really,
well, yes, it was for 2,500 people, it was a big
thing.
Yeah,
it was a big thing.
Something was going on, you know.
Yeah.
And everybody supported it. And the 4th of July, too, they had a street dance. They don't do those things anymore. Oh, and then for Fireman's Ball, I can remember as a kid, they had two orchestras. One was a jazz orchestra. But Livermore was a little out of date, so they had Sacos. And they played every other dance they played, and it would be a polka, shottish, you know, those old time things.
Oh, wow.
Because we weren't with it yet. Not all the way, anyway.
Just looking at the town leaders during then, what did you name who were like the more influential people in Livermore?
Well, Fred Lassen was very influential. He was mayor twice that I know of. And he had the mill down there by the railroad tracks across from Hooper's. And he was the one who, I believe, paved the main street. 1914 at that time. And he was mayor again when I was a kid. I'd say like 1928 along in there. And then George Tubbs was another one. And George Tubbs married Frieda Wente.
The Wente.
The winery.
Winery.
Wente's. And, he was a builder. And he tore down the old Livermore Hotel, I'll never forget. That was just about 1930, and he built up a whole lot of houses with the lumber. And the hotel was loaded with bed bugs. And about 6 months later, after people moved in, they were all complaining about bed bugs. So he had a lot of influence on the town at that time. Sam Bothwell was another, was a town councilman. And he's the one who built up the rec center that's there today on the old high school grounds.
Yeah, I went back too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess they call it Bothwell something or other now, don't they?
We just call it the rec center. But
yeah, well, he should be commemorated because he built that with his own time and money. It was a nice donation for the town. Let's see, who else? Tom Norris, out at the Fuse Works, he was not on city council, but he was a community leader. He was head of the Rodeo Association several times. Rassie Hansen was another one. But his time of influence was, I'd say, right after World War II. That comes later. He's more or less responsible for Livermore being retarded.
Retarded?
In business growth and that.
Oh, I see. He's retarded growth.
And Dr. Dolan was a city health officer for years and years. He didn't do anything about it. He used to go to the show and the rats would run down the aisle.
That must be pretty interesting. Oh,
yeah, very interesting. I remember Edith Kingsley sat with her purse like this one and the rats chewed the leather straps. And the purse dropped down, she got to go up, and all she had was the leather strap. So, wonderful health officer.
Yeah, I guess. Keep things clean. Were there any prominent clubs or, societies going on in Livermore?
Yes, Masonic Lodge was always prominent. They started in Pleasant in 71, and they moved here in 84. And they used the Oddfellows Hall, which was built in 74. I should have said 74 they moved here. And they rented the hall on the nights the Oddfellows didn't meet. Oddfellows were another strong one.
What were their functions as far as, are they social groups or?
They were just social groups, fraternity.
Fraternities.
Mm-hmm. Fraternal order, they call them.
Uh-huh.
And then they had ladies' groups, Eastern Star and the Rebeccas. They'd go with each one of them, you know. And what else? Well, the Catholics had their groups, the YLI and the YMI, which held a dance every year. Then there we had a, this is really very important, we had a National Guard unit, the old Company I. And every year they had a dance, military dance in Sweeney's.
I see.
A very fancy affair. Anybody that was anything got invited to that.
So it was more of a social event?
Very social event, yeah.
It was more like a social, I guess.
That started Livermore's 400.
Yeah, social elite class?
Yeah, yeah. Something well, like it wasn't really, but it was invitational.
More of a.
And if you were invited to that, it was always formal dress and everything very nice.
I see.
And you felt like you were somebody if you could go to that.
So outside of the, so you had basically like religious groups, I mean religious
churches,
clubs.
Church groups.
Groups, and you had social groups. Yeah, do you have anything, any type of business related clubs outside of that?
No, they didn't have a business-related club that put on anything like that. They did their business. They didn't enter into that. There were ladies' societies. There was the Improvement Club, which took care of the library park. Saw to it that the grounds were well kept. All that sort of thing. That's Carnegie Park now.
Carnegie Park?
Yeah. And it used to look wonderful. Of course, Myrtle Harp wouldn't let you step on the lawn. But what else? There, of course, there were the ladies had their card clubs. The men went to lodge. There were other lodges too. There were the Foresters and the Eagles, and there was maybe still is some of these. There were the Red Men. They all dressed up like Indians.
Were they like a historical society, or were they just
no, they were just a
guys
lodge.
Dressed up
a
in
lodge.
Red,
yeah,
and Indians.
Was their ritual of some kind.
Oh, I see.
And then there was the Moose.
That was another club. Or?
Yeah, it's a lodge. It's still going, and not here in town. But and then there were the Druids. I think that one's still going. Oh, there's secret orders, you know.
It's like they just met certain places and they had like.
Well, they have a ritual that nobody that isn't a member gets to know about. Of course, most people know about it, but that's all right. That's okay. They're a social group. That's exactly what they are.
Okay.
Well, then they did the in the 20s they started up the Lions Club. Remember that, and. It wasn't until after the war that we got Rotary, but Lions Club was going before that. And that, of course, is a service group.
Yeah, public services.
Public services.
Did they have an active, were they very active, or were they just very...
They were as active as they could be in a town of 2,500.
I see.
You know, what do you do? Everybody's getting along. They did things like help the school, help the park, or something like that, you know.
Let's see.
And then private citizens often would do something for the town. Like Rassi Hansen gave a piece of property for a little park to beautify the town. It's still there where there's a wagon parked in a little down on this end of Main Street. There's a rose garden in it.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Carlo Ferrario gave the land and Rassi Hansen took it over, put his name on it. Then there were some other little pieces that people gave to out in the middle of the street, you know.
Yeah. So basically the Lions Club was just starting out in the 20s and was kind of limited as far as what it could do for
it. Yeah, for the local community. They helped the poor if there were any poor. So did the lodges.
So everybody was...
You know, they'd give you a Christmas basket or whatever.
Okay. As far as like... water and power and
well, the old Livermore Water and Power Company that used to belong to the Howards. That started way back in the 70s as a Livermore Spring Water Company, just water. And they brought the water down from Cedar Mountain down the creek, and they down by Sackles out there in the Mocho. They put it into redwood flues and brought it to town.
Redwood flues was like containers?
Redwood pipes.
Pipes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I see on 3rd Street when they were digging the street and dug some up, thought they found something special.
And they were just redwood pipes?
Yeah, they were just the pipes for the water company.
Oh, I see.
My mother remembers when they would fix them, Ed Alward would smoke a cigarette and take the burnt match and put it in a leak. Seal it up. It's all wood, you know.
Yeah. So the Livermore Water and Power Company...
Well, then they begin to make power.
It was a privately owned company?
Yeah, well, the company itself was started by Dennis Burnell, the power company. And Howard's bought that out. And then through a stock deal, a man by the name of Dingy got the Water and Power Company away from the Howard's. It's a crooked deal, but legal, I guess. So they lost out on that, so all they had then was their machine works down on Railroad Avenue. And that was going until after the war. Which incidentally was a wonderful thing, because during the war, when we couldn't get anything, you could go to Ed Alward and he'd have something to fix your machinery. And he did it too.
So he's like, it's hard to say, I guess he was
He was a good machinist.
Good machinist.
Mm-hmm. He could make the parts, and he had parts of old things. He knew where they were. I don't know how he did that. But he'd go under the bench and pick something up. Here it is. He says, this'll fit. He'd do a little work on it, and take it home, and the machine is working again. But the power company, Dingy's heirs, Dingy died and the heirs, that's Ma work for the heirs. Bissell, Ma, was it Bissell that owned Water and Power Company? Bissell, yeah. They sold out to PG&E in about 1926, along there. And then, of course, PG&E has expanded it to what it is. And they gave up the water. The water went to Cal Water, and the power to PG&E. That's where they did it.
Yeah. Who took care of the sewage? Is that another privately owned office?
No, that was city.
That was done by the city.
The first sewer plant I remember as a little kid was down in the Northern Addition here. Because it was nothing but a big septic tank. And then they moved it west and back of what used to be the PX on Crowhair's property. And it was there until, it was there until about 1956. Very inadequate, stink, something terrible. And then they moved it to where it is. We had to sell them the property.
So, as far as communications go, more newspapers, what newspapers would you say were big?
Livermore Herald.
That was a big one. There's a Tribune, Oakland Tribune, was that?
Well, the Tribune was Oakland. Used to come in here.
Yeah, come here. It wasn't that popular on here.
Oh, yes, Tribune, Examiner, and Tribune, Examiner, and Chronicle. And you got those at Mackenzie's. Mackenzie's had the American Express, and they also handled magazines and newspapers. And you could subscribe to any one of those papers, and it would be in a box in Mrs. Mackenzie's office, and you would get it.
I see. Being the size Livermore was, I would assume that it was most of your advertising was done in like the more local papers?
In the Livermore Herald. And we had, at one time, we had the Echo.
The Echo?
The Echo, I believe, became the Journal. The Journal. There were two papers. The Journal, and then the Journal became the Southern Alameda County News, owned by Kingsley. The Henrys had the Herald. The Herald was the old original, started in 1974. Started as the Enterprise.
The Tri-Valley Herald, which is now today.
It's now Tri-Valley Herald, yeah. And frankly, it was a better paper in the 30s than it is now.
Things change.
Yeah, well, I like to read local news. There isn't any.
We already talked about the forms of transportation, about the car just being more of a novelty.
No, the car was useful in the 20s and 30s. You went uptown with a car. Oh, yes.
So it was being used a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were very few horses. There were six or seven people who came with a horse and buggy still.
Oh, I see. We were just talking about the cars in Livermore. Not the cars themselves, but let's say
the use of the
cars, their role. And you were saying that they were more of a they were becoming a large part of the town.
I would say by the 1920s, automobiles were the mode of transportation for the farmer to go uptown. The horse was time-consuming, and it got to the point where he wanted to save time. When I was 10 years old, we had a case car, and I used to drive uptown. I'd get the mail and get the groceries and stop at Lassen's. And Mom would say, look out for Doten. He was chief of police, and he'd wave at me by the flagpole.
Oh, because you weren't right of age to drive?
Yeah, I was only 10.
Oh, I see.
But in a little place like Livermore, nobody cared.
Yeah. And the railroad was still big.
The railroad was still big. The train was coming through.
Shippers, supplies.
Shippers. We used to ship cream, and you did that on the train. Take it to the depot, and it would go on the train down to the creamery, mm-hmm. where they churned it for butter. Once a week, they sent you a check. That was, the cows were mortgage payers. You got a good weekly check off of them. Everybody milked cows. What a pain you were.
Yeah, I can imagine. Was most of the produce raised in Livermore are shipped out of town? I think we were
In the 20s and most of the 30s, we had some vegetable produce, the Scanones. And the Scanones and their relatives, let's see, I can't remember now. Italian people, they lived out on Livermore's property. In fact, Katie Livermore married Scanone, who built the Scanone building. And they grew a lot of vegetables, and they sold most of it right here locally.
Mm-hmm.
And what was excess, they shipped to the market.
I see.
But they had a vegetable wagon that went around, and then they had a store in town. Right next to Dutcher's hardware store, and they sold their produce there, and they bought from other farmers. Like my mother's father had a big orchard out here, and they bought his fruit and sold it. So see, shipping things in wasn't so great. It took time, so the fresh produce was best.
So as far as it was produced here, was most of it consumed here?
It was consumed here.
It was most of it was mm-hmm. consumed here. So there's a very little outside influence outside of the valley.
No, well, see, each Livermore had its vegetable gardens. The Scanones had it, and down in Pleasanton, another Italian fellow had it. Paul DeLucchi. DeLucchi's had it, and they supplied the town of Pleasanton, and some old probably had their. A lot of people had little vegetables here. I remember we picked mushrooms one year, just the wild ones, you know, and we took them to the Bargman's grocery store.
And sold them?
And sold them. But then people bought them, and something like 2 hours, they were all gone. Because that was the only way you got mushrooms in the old days.
And we, as far as what we were talking about, San Francisco and Oakland, they were the places to be or go.
Yes.
For entertainment.
Any big shows, except for the movies. We got good movies out here. But stage shows, the opera, some people like to go, that type of thing. It all had to be San Francisco. We used to go and park our car in a garage in Oakland and take the key route. The train would take you out to the end of the track out in the bay, and you'd catch the ferry. And the streetcar up to the opera house or wherever you were going, the theater. And we'd have a midnight meal and come home.
So it was like an all-day event?
No. We'd go early afternoon and all-evening event. It wasn't so wild. It'd be an hour to Oakland, you know. And then that old key route, that took you there fast. You were like 15 minutes on the train and 20 minutes to cross the bay, and just a few minutes on the streetcar up to the opera house or the theater, the center of town. You know.
Well, that's right. They didn't have a bridge yet, did they?
So no, they had no bridge.
So you had to
you took
take
the
ferry.
And the key route was the best service.
I see. Yeah, it's hard for me to think of that, because like when I go, I'm there across the bridge, no problem.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, so you didn't have a traffic problem.
Yeah.
With a train, they zip right, have the right of way, you know. Rough riding old train, but they were fast.
So, but as far as, let's say, as far as transportation, you know, then it was more of use of the car than
the automobile.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was it something that you did frequently? I mean, your family yourself, did your family go into the city a lot, or was it like maybe a very special occasion?
No, I'd say we would go about once a month.
Once a month?
Of course, we'd go like in the summer, we might go once a week. If you had a breakdown with the machinery, like the case equipment, you know.
You go down to
Case Company in Oakland to get the parts.
Yeah.
They didn't have them here.
So you were basically dependent upon for the city also for like industrial parks and things like that? Or?
Well, yeah, see, if you had a crew of men here working, it was cheaper for you to take the car and go down and get those parts and get that fixed right away. Mm-hmm. And if you waited for the local agent to telephone it in and wait for the train to bring it.
Local agent was someone who...
He was a representative of this company, for instance. You know.
Okay, and then he would phone and say, we need a part out here.
Yeah.
I see.
If you could anticipate what was happening and call in early, that's okay, but... If it broke, bingo, you're stuck with a crew of men. You better take your car and go get it and fix it right within the same morning or afternoon.
The question in my own mind is not on this paper, but I kind of wonder. As far as what was going on in the United States, you know, mm-hmm. as a whole country, were you more aware, was it more of a consciousness of what was going on?
We were conscious of everything that went on, sure.
It was like things that were going on, like in Europe and things like that?
Yes, the newspapers were full of it. And the radio, news on the radio, new news on the radio. I used to go stay with my friend on Saturdays sometimes. And every noontime, a whole hour of news. Papa had here news, and the kids were bored.
Yeah.
But there was plenty of news, no television, of course, but we got the news, maybe we got it better, because you had to work for it, you know, your mind, you didn't look at it.
Yeah, the thing
it sank
that.
In. No, I think the daily paper came, like the... Papers, Tribune, they were printed in the morning and you'd have them in the afternoon, so you got the daily news right away.
So it wasn't really as if you were...
We were not isolated.
Isolated at all.
No. And then we all had telephones.
Telephones was which were you could keep contact with people?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we turned the crank. It cost us $2.70 a year.
$2.70?
Yeah, we owned the lines.
So
we had to do our own repairs.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I can remember when my mother and dad went off to Oakland and I was here alone and I had to call my aunt in Oakland and Hazel was the chief operator. So I turned the crank and she came on and I says, Hazel, or no, it was Mrs. Shanks. Be polite, you know. I have to talk to Aunt Sue, but I don't know the number. So she says, just a minute. And before I could say Jack Robinson, Aunt Sue was on the line.
Wow.
From Oakland. Everybody knew everybody else. See, that was... And everybody else's business, too.
I see. So wasn't that... That's pretty good.
That was one time I enjoyed it. There were some times when I wished they would not pay attention to me.
Well, I'm gonna have to end this conversation, but I would like to thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
That was a very good time. So this is a little bit more conversation with Mr. Hageman. You're talking about the schools?
Yes. Schools were a big part of social life and family life, too. Every so often, I'd say once a year, there was an event at the school, the local public school. And I think the convent surely did this too, Catholics. Where they'd have a kind of a social get-together, and they'd have a little dance. And the teachers and the parents and the school board would all be there, and it would be... just a nice social get-together. It wasn't for money. It didn't seem that we needed money because we didn't need expansion. Our population was more or less stable. And it seemed for some reason that the education department attracted social activity for some reason. And then, of course, the PTA was started in the 20s, and they also had social events of various kinds. And they would raise a little money once in a while for something. They used to finance the lunches. If you brought your lunch to school and a dog took it, you could get a free lunch from the PTA. Various things of that nature that they took care of, all on a small scale because we were a small community. We had our school plays, always attended by the local population, always a sellout no matter how bad they were. And I can remember the senior play held in the Sweeney Opera House with a full house. I think they seated 500 people, perhaps more than that.
So the schools offered a social outlet?
But they were a social outlet as well as educating the children. People had a closer interest those days in the small town because there wasn't anything else to do, really.
Mm-hmm.
So to take an interest in school and to have some kind of event around it was very attractive. And that way the whole family could enter into it. They didn't have barbecues or anything. It would be some kind of an evening event.
And with schools that...
There was only the Livermore Public School and the Livermore High School. That was all there was.
Mm-hmm.
And the St. Michael's Catholic School, which was quite small.
Mm-hmm. And was there anything type of athletic programs going on at that time?
Or? Not really. The high school did have ball teams. They had the girls' basketball, and the boys had a football team.
That's fine.
Yeah, that was another thing where the town went. You didn't just have the parents.
So it was more...
Yeah, the school had a big auditorium, and what, maybe were 40 kids, and two parents each was 80, and all the rest was for everybody else. Lots of room.
Yeah, basically it seems to me that during that time, a lot of things were more group-oriented or family-oriented, would you say?
Yeah, they were. Always in a small town, that's the way it is.
I see. Yeah, that would be about...
And that too, was the times. The family group has more or less deteriorated over the generations since then. Back in the 30s and 40s, we were still a little bit 19th century.
More of a nuclear family, or you had a lot of more relatives living with you?
Yes, we had a lot more relatives close at hand.
I see.
I can remember Sundays. We always had company on Sunday. And they'd come out of Oakland, San Francisco, you know, and lots of relatives.
Yeah.
And friends. And of course, my dad was German. His grandfather was from the old country, but we had a thing going, you know, always writing letters. And people were here from the same town, and they'd come and visit. You know. So we had a constant flow of visiting traffic, I guess you'd call it. And people got together because they didn't go long distances. They would come for coffee. Like the Wendy's would come over on Sunday. And we'd go out there. Carry money, put my tricycle.
Stuff you remember.
Well, I was going to recommend that you go see Danny Dutrow.
Danny Dutrow.
Danny is a little older than I am. He's a real character. His dad was a barber, and so was he up on the main street.
His last name's
D-U-T-R-O.